With threats to our nation waiting around every corner, adaptability is more important than ever. When conditions change without notice, quick strategic thinking is crucial, and with obstacles consistently impending, determination is essential in overcoming them. It's this willingness, decisiveness, and resilience that sets Marines apart. With our fighting spirit, we don't just fight battles, we win them. Marines are the constant our nation counts on to fight the unknown, and through adaptable problem-solving, we do just that. Learn more at marines.com.
This is the Royal Blue Podcast from the Liverpool Echo, giving you the inside track on all the big talking points from Goodison Park.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to the latest edition of the Royal Blue Podcast. I am your host, Joe Thomas, and this is, of course, the last show before the new season. I think it's come around ever so quickly, and to be honest, probably a bit too quickly after some of the memories of last season. But here we are. We're going to discuss all the latest of the transfer news, the Chelsea game that's coming up, and, of course, some of the memories of the last time that Everton were at Goodison Park in the Premier League, which is, of course, the Crystal Palace game that I think will live long in the memories of anybody who was there. Now, I'm joined by my Echo colleague, Conor O'Neill, and I'm also privileged to say that we're joined by the BBC's John Murray today as well. It's a voice that I think you will all recognise when you're listening to this later on today and ahead of the Chelsea game. John, it's brilliant to have you on the show. Thanks ever so much for coming on.
No, pleasure. No, I'm looking forward to it. Actually, it'll be my first match of the new season. And in actual fact, this season, we've actually, on Five Live, we've got the 5:30 kickoffs in the Premier League back. So I'm quite excited about starting off at Goodison, but also getting those 5:30s back is a bit of a thrill for us. So, really looking forward to it.
Well, obviously, it's... we're still in the summer, so it's not quite going to be Goodison Park under the lights tomorrow. But there are many places. I'm sure. I mean, you've been all over the country, all over the world in your career. Just put into perspective, what is Goodison Park under the lights like for somebody like yourself?
Yeah, do you know, I was actually just looking back because I know pictures have surfaced, haven't they, of just how things are looking with the new stadium and obviously progress is being made. So it made me think, actually, you know, really now time is running out, and it is only, if everything goes to plan, that's going to be two seasons. So this is the start of the penultimate season at Goodison Park. And, you know, it's a bit of a stereotype to say it, but there is something special about it because of that, because of how things have developed over the years and because of the fact that Goodison still has that feel now that is quite rare when you go to a big club to have that old-fashioned feeling. I felt it last season at Elland Road, actually, when I went back there again. But usually now, you do not experience that. And every time I go there, as I'm sure will be the case for all Everton fans, whenever they go, it genuinely does put a tingle up my spine when they play the Zedcars theme and they come out and the atmosphere, as it was in some of those games at the end of last season, can be raucous, and Goodison's such a big part of that, isn't it?
Absolutely, and I think tomorrow, obviously, there'll be efforts to recreate that in the same way that inspired the team so much at the end of last season. I think the bridge that was built between Frank Lampard, the players, and the supporters was so crucial to helping Everton get to safety. Conor, obviously, there's going to be efforts to welcome the coach again tomorrow. I mean, how difficult or how easy do you think it'll be to recreate some of that passion and intensity from the back end of last season in the hope of inspiring Everton in the new season?
I think it should be a little bit easier in many respects because it's a fresh season and there's new optimism and, you know, there's things to be looked to look forward to and things to kind of go at. I think, you know, last year in terms of recreating the atmosphere that was created, it was more in kind of nervousness, I think, because the fear of Everton being relegated, and, you know, John just touched on there in terms of the penultimate season. You know, there was conversations going on between Everton phones that, you know, at the end of last season might be the last time we see Premier League or Goodison, Premier League football, Goodison Park, because obviously, you know, 2 years to go, we all know this season would have been the Championship, and, you know, the Championship is an unforgiving division, and you don't have any divine right to get straight back in the Premier League. So I think in terms of the atmosphere and, you know, that carnival spirit, I think what we saw last year, I think that'll be a lot easier to recreate this time around, because, like I say, I think the optimism has replaced the nervousness that we saw last year, because I think, well, you know, everyone was right up for it. There was a certain amount of tension in the air because, you know, them games were huge for Everton in terms of staying up, and, you know, every fan knew that Goodison Park was going to be crucial in Everton staying in the Premier League. Now, you know, it's a blank sheet of paper, isn't it? You know, everyone's starting on 0 points. You know, everyone's kind of got a lot to look forward to. So I think it should be a lot easier, and I think people could almost enjoy themselves a little bit more tomorrow welcoming the coach, because the pressure's off, and although we all want to see Everton get off to a good start, there's not that lingering thought of, if it just doesn't go well today, it could result in us playing Championship football next season.
Absolutely. It might be quite a nice coincidence, almost quite interesting the way that the fixture list has thrown up Chelsea is that at home is the first game of the season. I think for many of us who are watching Everton in the pits of that relegation battle last season would probably draw back to Chelsea, the home game, the 1-0 win with Richarlison's goal, as being the moment that perhaps changed Everton's fortunes. John, I think that was your last time at Goodison Park. What was that occasion like for you?
Yeah, I remember stepping out of the door to see what was happening, and actually everyone as well, when we were upstairs in the main stand there, looking out of the window and down and seeing the sight outside on the street when the bus arrived and all of the smoke, and you know whether it did play a part or not, I don't know. I think that was the night as well that there was the disturbance outside the Chelsea hotel, wasn't it?
It was,
which got a mention. I seem to remember, but you know, in the end, you know, I've seen that sort of thing before, and it can have no effect whatsoever. But on that particular day, you know, whether it played a part or not, I don't know. What I do know is that, you know, there was a bit of spirit there, wasn't there? And you know, if you remember how Jordan Pickford played in that match, I mean, that was the most important thing that happened that day. And I mean, what I saw of him towards the end of the season, he was in outstanding form. But I think that the feeling is different. As Connor says, the feeling is different because of the fact there's no Richarlison, and because of the fact there's no replacement, and because of the fact that, you know, for the first few weeks of the season, there's going to be no Calvert-Lewin. So there is, you know, anything Everton get over these opening weeks, you know, if they're able to go on a run and be above par in terms of points against games, then I think that, you know, that does give them a little bit of a base. And who knows what's going to happen over the course of the remainder of this transfer window as well. Clearly, things are going to happen, aren't they?
Yeah, of course. And I mean, you refer to Jordan Pickford there, and that's another parallel between tomorrow and the last Chelsea game, because remember very much that he played he came to the fore as a leader in the back end of last season for Everton, and no more so than in that Chelsea game where he made that incredible double save, first from Azpilicueta and then from Antonio Rudiger. I remember at the beginning of that match, just watching as the players came out, there's big banners for him on the Gladys Street end as pronouncing him as England's number one, and certainly his performances in that game and following that really, I think, strengthened his claim in that position. Obviously, tomorrow as well, with Seamus Coleman, the club captain, being injured, all the noises are that Jordan Pickford will, having burnished his leadership credentials in that campaign, will probably be the captain tomorrow. So it's another nice little parallel. I'll make one more reference to last season, and then we'll focus on this. And this coming one, Connor, obviously, this is the last time in the Premier League, it's the first time in the Premier League since that night at Crystal Palace. I mean, what an unforgettable night that was. You were alongside me, I think, in the press box. Just, I mean, as an Everton fan, as an Everton reporter, how much have you looked back on those incredible scenes over the course of the summer?
Yeah, I mean, it's not just over the summer, just this morning. I saw a video on social media that I ended up watching a couple of times. Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, as a certain age like I am, you know, you haven't really had many on Goodison nights. You know, there's people like my dad and my uncle and stuff, they've got Bayern Munich in the 1985 Cup Winners' Cup, you know, there's other nights before that. But I think for a lot of young Evertonians and a lot of, you know, kind of today's youth generation, that was their big kind of moment, that big night at Goodison, where, you know, to go back to what Howard Kendall once famously said, you know, the Gladys Street suck one in. You know, it was that type of occasion. And I think, you know, I don't think I'll ever forget, you know, when Calvert-Lewin scored and kind of put my head down to type. And about 30 seconds later, looking back up, and the pitch was like full of fans and thinking, bedlam, you know, like, and then obviously, you know, the scenes are full time as well. And, you know, I just think it was on the night, wasn't it, where people just didn't want to go home, they just didn't want to leave Goodison Park. If you said to supporters, do you want to sleep tonight? Many would have just camped up because they were just kind of that engrossed by what they'd witnessed, and, you know, shell shocked at, you know, the comeback, because, you know, let's face it, at half time, Everton looked dead and buried, you know, they were 2-0 down. Mountain to climb, and although they wouldn't be relegated that night, the prospect of going to Arsenal the week on that weekend coming, needing to get a result, knowing that they needed to win to keep the pressure on Tottenham to get top four, knowing how bad the kind of away record had been that season. Mm-hmm. You know, it was almost as if many other teams had resigned themselves to the fact of, well, if we don't get over the line tonight, we're not going to get over the line at all, and we will require other teams to do us a favour. So I think it was just one of them nights that will live long in the memory, and I think it was kind of iconic in the sense of, you know, with Goodison kind of coming towards its end, many of today's youth and people like yourself of a certain age got to witness one of them moments that you can look back on in, you know, 20, 30 years to come and tell your grandkids, like, you know, many grandkids like myself have been told about Bayern Munich and stuff like that. It was one of them nights. And I know people always question, well, we should have been in that position, we should have been fighting for survival. But Everton were, they were in that position, they were fighting for survival. And, you know, one thing that no one can ever take away is the fact that the fans pulled that side over the line when it mattered most, and, you know, rightly celebrated because of the hard work that they put in just as much as Frank Lampard and the players.
Absolutely. I think I remember just after the final whistle, in my role, it's my job to write the best part of 1,000 words of a verdict piece that has to be ready within about 15 minutes of the final whistle. I can just remember just being sat there at my laptop with all the chaos going around, trying to think, how on earth do I put this into words when all you want to do is essentially be in amongst the crowd. Obviously, that was last season, and now we're on the eve of a new season. John, Everton had been quiet in the transfer market. It picked up a little bit last week with the loan signing of Ruben Vinagre and the signing of Dwight McNeil. It looks like it's going to get even busier as well. It's touch and go as to whether or not a new signing is going to be ready for the Chelsea game. We'll know the answer for that by the time that this podcast is out there. But having watched Everton over the course of the summer and following some of the transfer activity at other clubs in the Premier League that were around them, I mean, what's your assessment as to where Everton lie and what their ambition should perhaps be this season?
Well, I think my assessment of where they lie right now, with everything taken into consideration, and I know there's a lot of talk around that that effectively signed the young midfielder Onana from Lille, Idrissa Gueye, whether he's going to be a part of it. Certainly if they get those two, then Onana is clearly a player who has got promise, but Idrissa Gueye has got real quality in that position. But as we're talking now, you look at every match over these opening weeks, Chelsea for starters, away at Aston Villa, home to Nottingham Forest, newly promoted. I mean, if they get a strong start, Brentford away, I think they've done some interesting business. Leeds away. I mean, it is, isn't it? You look at all of those games and you think, ooh, that's tricky. That's tricky for Everton. But I think maybe the expectation will help. And also the fact that it is the first, it's the start of a season for Frank Lampard for the first time with that club. So he's been able to do the work that he's wanted to do to get to this position. So I think he'll have a clearer idea of what he needs and how he wants to operate. And I think a big thing that you can look at this either way. I think a big thing in Everton's favour is that Frank Lampard needs this to work.
Yes.
It's so important for him, his prospects, his career. So if it works for him, if it's good for him, it's good for Everton as well.
The Royal Blue Podcast from the Liverpool Echo.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
I think that's one of the things that probably look at Everton from lots of different perspectives, that it doesn't matter whether you look at the board, whether you look at the manager, whether you look at the players, or whether you look at the fans. Regardless of anybody's motives in any of these situations, all of them want the same thing, which is to do Everton, which is for Everton to do well and perform better on the pitch. It's clear that there's been an increase in activity in the transfer market, and it does look like Onana is very close to signing. I mean, obviously, it's a significant change in tactics from Everton in this transfer window, having spent most of it operating apparently operating on a on a shoestring budget. But obviously it's something that's going to bring some much needed excitement to supporters. And obviously the return of Idrissa Gueye, well, he does, as a player, he does strengthen that centre midfield. So that will leave them in a strong position as well. But perhaps the biggest news of this week is less in what might happen in the transfer window and probably more in what's happened to Dominic Calvert-Lewin. Connor, we've seen Ellis Sims go out on loan. We've seen Lewis Dobbin go out on loan. We know that Solomon Rondon is suspended. Just how significant do you feel that Calvert-Lewin's loss? It does look like it's probably going to be for most of this month as well.
Yeah, I think if you'd have asked Frank Lampard what was the worst news he could have been greeted with before the start of the season, it would have been Dominic Calvert-Lewin, you know, picking up an injury and being ruled out for a month or so, you know, certainly the opening month of the season. It's gut-wrenching, I think, for Everton fans is the way to describe it. I think, you know, after last season, in terms of, you know, he's after such a brilliant start under Rafa Benitez, when he got 3-3, he then spent, you know, so long on the sidelines, you know, injured, and then came back and played a part towards the end of the season. Obviously, got the goal with Crystal Palace. You know, he was pretty open, wasn't he, in the summer, in terms of, you know, the struggles he's endured and how he found it really difficult in terms of watching on and not being able to play a part for Everton. But I think, yeah, I think in terms of the news, it's you know, it's the worst possible outcome for Everton, because he's the one player, you know, probably except with the exception of Jordan Pickford, who Everton are relying on. You know, they've got no goal threat, you could almost say, right now this minute. You know, Richarlison's gone, Calvert-Lewin out. It doesn't look great in terms of, you know, goals and attack and play. And I just think in terms of him as well himself, you know, he almost needed to kickstart this season to make sure he was on the plane for the World Cup in Qatar, because, you know, last season he certainly found himself on the outskirts looking in terms of the England squad. I know people probably moved ahead of him just simply because they played more matches, and he kind of felt that he needed a real strong start this season to put himself back in Gareth Southgate's thoughts and plans. And, you know, for him to be hit with this type of injury, you know, so close to the start of the season as well, you know, a couple of days before, it is just, you know, like I say, it's gut-wrenching. And I think, you know, he leaves a massive hole and a massive, you know, void that no one else can fill at the club. You know, there's no one else who can step in and, you know, fill the shoes. No, Rondon should be back for next week at Aston Villa. But, you know, you're asking an awful lot of him to be able to do what Calvert-Lewin does for Everton and bring to Frank Lampard's side what Dominic Calvert-Lewin does. So, yeah, I think it's the worst possible news any Everton fan and Frank Lampard could have been hit with. And, you know, I think you don't want to start the season on a downer, but I think it certainly dented people's optimism early on the week that they had going into the new campaign, because I think many thought, well, you know, it's just a case of trying to get through August the best we can and hopefully get Dominic Calvert-Lewin back fit for September and get him firing. Because like we saw last year as well, when he come back, it did take a bit of time to get back into the groove of things and get back, you know, anywhere near the best that we'd seen the season before under Carlo Ancelotti, when he had his most prolific spell in front of goal. So it does leave the Blues short up top, but, you know, Frank Lampard's been dealt this card now, and it's up to him to come up with a plan of how Everton, you know, can attack Chelsea and get at Chelsea on Saturday, because, like I say, they've got no forwards. But yeah, I think on the whole, it was pretty gut-wrenching. And I think, you know, there'll be a lot of kind of disappointed faces around Fudge Farm that this is occurred and this has happened, because it just seems, you know, the look, typical of the look that Calvert-Lewin's had over the last 18 months, that, you know, he finds himself again watching off from the sidelines instead of playing.
Feels typical of the luck that Frank Lampard probably had at Everton as well. You think back end of last season, which is injury after injury and controversial decision after controversial decision. And you think, had at least some of them gone his way, Everton's may have been out of peril a little bit earlier than they eventually got to. Now, I think Lampard would have sought additional forward recruits even before Dominic Calvert-Lewin's injury. If we saw the quotes that he put in after the defeat to Minnesota United, and I know that was only a pre-season friendly, but, you know, he's quite clear that following the loss of Richarlison, that Everton needed more forward options. And I think that's a view he carried over from last season. Now, they signed Dwight McNeil since then. They almost certainly need to sign somebody else. John, one of the things that Frank has alluded to quite a few times during his pre-season, I've seen other managers do it as well, is the unusual makeup of this summer, with the sense that you have a slightly shortened pre-season after a slightly longer season, particularly when you consider the internationals that started at the beginning of June. We then have the World Cup in the middle of the season as well. I mean, how much different do you think this season's likely to play out for the Premier League clubs? And how do you think that would likely impact a manager's thought process going into the start of the season? It's almost as if you almost have like a fake start to the season where you have five games where, because the transfer window is so open, because so many clubs perhaps leave in business so late, that you almost have a phony war going on where the real season starts in September?
Well, I mean, first of all, I think in an absolutely ideal world, the top clubs, Premier League clubs, wouldn't be flying all over the world playing pre-season friendly tournaments. And I mean, some of the travel it has been incredible, really. And that's the thing the managers will never mention when the talk comes to the demands on the players. But I do understand it because of everything that happened during the pandemic. You know, money has to be made up. And that is a great way to, spread the brand, to use the phrase, and increase revenues and earn money. Basically, that's what it's all about. So there's that. Then there's the fact that the season starts earlier, then it ends later. What's going to happen during the World Cup, and certainly for the top players and the players who are involved right throughout the World Cup and to the latter stages. I think it means, well, clearly we've never had a season like this before that's ahead of us in the Premier League. And I feel that there is every chance that certainly in the aftermath of the World Cup, maybe all running all the way to the end of the season, I mean, you could see genuinely unpredictable things happening, coupled with the fact that everything is crammed in. Champions League, you know, consecutive weeks, one after the other, to finish those group stages ahead of time. Obviously, the League Cup's thrown in there as well. So I think all of that means that there are a lot of unknowns about this season. And I think you could potentially see that, particularly in the sort of month, 6 weeks after the World Cup.
Mm. Connor, I think when you think about how unpredictable this season's going to be, well, obviously, there are normally some winners amidst the chaos of unpredictability. Everton go into the season, looking ahead to the World Cup, at the minute you'd say there's only Jordan Pickford who's heading out to Qatar. The big question would have been whether Dominic Calvert-Lewin could have forced his way into Gareth Southgate's plan, and obviously his injury will hit him on that. When we have a congested season after the World Cup, obviously one thing that Everton won't have to contend with is Europe either. If they can strengthen the squad, and bearing in mind the Frank Lampard and his coaching staff have had a full summer with the players now, do you think there's any chance that Everton could actually be a bit of a surprise package, or could actually maybe use some of that unpredictability to their advantage? They'll be one of a few squads with hardly any players out for the World Cup, so that's effectively a six-week window in the middle of the season where they can assess and work on things and give players a rest if needed, for instance.
Yeah, I definitely think they could be the surprise package. There's no reason why they can't be. I think you look in the Premier League in history, you know, there's always a surprise package. There's always someone somewhere crops up where you don't quite, you know, picture them being, whether it be at the top end of the table or the bottom end of the table. I see no reason why Everton could be, you know, in the top end of the table, you know, in a position that no one maybe thought they would be in. I think in terms of the World Cup and the rest, I think only form at that time will tell. So I think if Everton got off to a really good start and, you know, the kind of top 10, you know, top 8, you know, eyes on the top 6, for instance, you know, when that time November comes around, when we do stop the World Cup, I think Lampard will be frustrated because you want to keep playing, you want to keep, you know, momentum going, and you want to keep that, build on that momentum that you built and keep going, and, you know, everyone's chomping at the bit to get out there. To stop for 6 weeks is a bit of a blow. I think the opposite side of that is if you have a ropey start and you're not quite firing, the fact that you can have a 6 week pre-season effectively with a large part of your squad and work on things and go over things and almost start afresh on Boxing Day is another boost. So I think in terms of having been a surprise package, there's no reason why they can't be, because, you know, they do have some talented players. You know, they do have some good players. You know, they probably have underachieved the last couple of years, some of the players that they've got. I think, as, you know, as John alluded to earlier as well, you know, they get Idrissa Garnaghi and Onana in from Lille, for instance, that improves the squad straight away. You know, if they can get maybe another forward player in before the window shuts, or in the next couple of weeks or so, to boost the attack options, that's another big boost. So I think they've certainly got, you know, no reason why they can't be looking to, you know, break the top 10, because, like I say, they've got some, you know, talented players, and players who probably underachieved a little bit. But I think in terms of the break, I think if you're flying high, I mean, I was talking to someone in football last week about it, and they realized almost the COVID pandemic, when the pandemic hit. I think it was 9 week, they had a 9 week layoff, I think, or 10 week layoff between games finishing and starting up again. And you look then, you know, teams were flying high when the season was, you know, unfortunately halted due to the pandemic. You know, never really got back into the groove of things when it restarted. I think Sheffield United were one who kind of tailed off and never recovered. You know, the season later, they ultimately went down. Whereas Aston Villa, if you remember, you know, they'd been battered Leicester just before the football stopped for the pandemic, but then used that 10 weeks to regroup, get themselves back going, and ended up staying up that season with a kind of late season revival. So I think it depends on what position you're in is how you will view it, because, like I say, I think if Everton are flying high and, you know, picking points up and winning, and, you know, momentum's high and morale's good in the camp, Frank Lampard will be gutted that his side will be playing for 6 weeks. But if they're on the ropes and they're struggling, they've got a few knocks, like we saw with last year at times where, you know, they were struggling for bodies almost in terms of, you know, the injuries were piling up, they'll be extremely grateful for the 6 week break, because it'll give them a chance to reset, work on things and go again. Obviously, you know, Everton are off to Australia, aren't they, as well in that time, and I suspect they'll be doing a few other things to keep players ticking over. But the fact that they won't have the competitive nature of the Premier League will be a welcome relief if they do find themselves in that position.
Must admit, yeah, you surprise in context of last season when I think of Everton, and obviously, yeah, there's potential there for them to do a lot better than expectations. I think over the course of the summer, I've seen a lot of people suggesting they'd be in another relegation fight, and I think they'll avoid a relegation fight, and I think it might surprise a few by, you know, perhaps pushing towards the breaking into the top 10. I think, John, obviously we saw last season was a terrible season for Everton. There's no way of buttering that up. For them to, for a club of that stature, to have ended up in a relegation battle that came so close to catastrophe as it did was, you know, it was unthinkable at the start of the season. Bear in mind what happened last season, and we can probably consider this question without necessarily knowing the full extent of what happens in the transfer window. What do you think would represent signs of progress for Everton in this campaign?
I think if they could get a top half finish. I think from where we are now, as we speak now, I think a top half finish, plus I think you want encouraging signs in there. You want to be able to look at what Everton are doing and thinking, I can see where they're heading, you know, and so I think that's an important thing, that you see positive signs that, you know, they will be heading towards challenge, because that's what Everton fans have been expecting and hoping for since Farhad Moshiri first bought the club. And I mean, to say that it's faltered is such an understatement. I mean, everyone knows the figures. I mean, it's extraordinary, really, that, you know, that a football club can spend as much money as that and yet be where they are now. So I think, I mean, you'll know better than me, Connor, but I think, you know, Everton supporters are looking for any crumbs of optimism that they can get out of this season, the way things are just now.
A coherent strategy, I think, would be that's visible on the pitch and everyone can see that's playing out, I think would represent significant progress. Absolutely.
The Royal Blue Podcast from the Liverpool Echo.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Connor, how important do you think the patience of the fan base is when it comes to that? Obviously, we know what a fantastic attribute supporters can be at Goodison Park for Everton. Yeah, we also know that last season was challenging and this season may well bring its own challenges as well. And for Frank Lampard and his coaching staff, their rebuilding project, it may well take time. Even if Everton get a couple of signings over the line in the next few days or the next few weeks, obviously it's going to take time for them to bed in. Particularly with Onana, it would take time for him to bed into the Premier League if they bring him into first team action straight away. How much do you think patience is important to, you know, Everton fans, giving Frank Lampard patience for his plans, for his strategy to develop and play out?
Yeah, I think you described that very kindly there, Joe, in terms of the atmosphere, because I've always said Goodison would be the best place in the world to play football, but the worst place in the world to play football at times, because we have, and I think, you know, you'll look back at last year, you saw that, you know, we all saw that with our own eyes, didn't you? You know, there were some great, great moments, but there's also some very toxic moments where, you know, things unfortunately turned nasty and, you know, fans kind of voiced their opinion and made their feelings quite clear. I think in terms of patience, I think the best thing Everton have got this season in terms of the patience and what is a lot of the fans really buy into Frank Lampard. They're really behind him. They really buy into him. They hang off every word he says. It's probably he's probably the first manager I've seen, probably since David Moyes, who's had that real fan connection where, you know, people will give him benefit of the doubt. People, you know, people will kind of, you know, almost kind of take something on the chin, not kick off, not make no voice their opinion, because they can see, you know, how much it means for him. They can see the work he's putting in to make it work. You know, he's extremely honest. I mean, you know, Michael Ball, our columnist at the Echo, obviously a former Blues fullback, he hit the nail on the head, you know, a few months ago in one of his columns last season when he said, you know, Frank's realised you can't kid Evertonians. You can't kid them. You know, they're intelligent, like most football fans, you go watch the team every, they're intelligent football fans. They know the stuff. They know what they want to see, and you can't kid them. And I think that's the big thing with Frank. He's been honest. He's been open. You know, when things haven't worked well, he's been honest. I think some of his comments that have landed in hot water certainly helped him with the fan base. You know, I think, you know, back to Anfield, certainly post-match when, you know, there's my mark of, if, you know, if Salah goes down like Gordon did at the cop end of the penalty, that's what every Everton fan was saying on the streets. So straight away, you got that, you know, mirroring what the fans are saying. So I think in terms of patience, I think you'll get a lot more patience than what we've seen with previous managers. I think Everton fans want this to work. I think ultimately Everton fans don't want to be recruiting, going through another managerial process where a manager's sacked and they're on the hunt for someone, because, you know, like we've all seen and we've all wrote about, you know, where do they go next if it doesn't work out? Because they've tried every possibility from, you know, under Farmer's reign, from the experience, the high profile name, young up and coming coach. They've tried everything and it's not worked. So they've got to stick with Frank. They've got to give him time. And I think, you know, you look at the transfers and people who are coming in, there's particularly just going to get out of the equation for argument's sake. But, you know, it's young, hungry players who've probably got a point to prove, which is what Everton fans have wanted to see. You know, they don't want big money, high profile players who are, you know, probably here for the wrong reasons. And I think they've also got a manager who's young, trying to prove a point, because ultimately there's still question marks over Frank as a manager. You know, he done well at Derby, was in the playoff final, but then, you know, Chelsea was a little bit hit and miss. Things didn't quite work out. And, you know, I think John alluded to it earlier in terms of this has got to work for Frank Lampard as much as it's got to work for Everton, because it's almost like last chance saloon for him in terms of being a Premier League manager, because if it doesn't work out for Everton in the position they're in, where else is he going to realistically get a job in the Premier League that is, you know, of high calibre? I think, you know, Everton is probably the best that Frank Lampard could have wished for at the time when he got, you know, in terms of big club, big fan base and looking to try and move up the table. So I think it's got to work all parties, and I think fans will get behind Frank Lampard. I think they will give him time, because I think already they can see signs that he wants to change things. You know, he's already kind of working behind the scenes. You can see the way his management skills and stuff. He is keen on changing things. I think change was needed. So I think they will give him time. I think they're buying into what he wants. And I certainly think, you know, it'll be a long time until we see the toxic scenes that we witnessed towards the end of Rafa Benitez's tenure, even though it was ever so short last season.
I think you talked about some of the comments that Lampard made. I think I was a reporter who asked a question whose answer ended up costing him £30,000 last season. So might not have made eye contact after that fine came through and I saw him next. John, obviously you'll have seen Lampard throughout his playing career. And obviously what a wonderful talent he was and won everything in the game. And you'll have seen his early years, the early stage of his managerial career as well now. How have you made his transition from player to manager? Has there been anything that has particularly surprised you or impressed you? Or, you know, do you think have you seen glimpses of the attributes that could enable him to succeed as a manager?
I would have liked to have seen him get a little bit longer at Chelsea, but yeah. Chelsea is Chelsea. And I mean, if they can do that to Frank Lampard, they can do it to absolutely anyone. And they do that to absolutely anyone on a regular basis. I think there were positive signs, certainly in the way that he wants to play. And still this Chelsea team, this Chelsea squad, you know, has got a lot of Frank Lampard all over it still. I think for his position, you know, when he moved into management and made it clear that that's where he wanted to go, immediately people are talking about him potentially being an England manager. Mm-hmm. And you know, surely that would be a, a, an ambition of his. For that to happen now, he's got to be successful with Everton. He's been a championship manager with Derby and did relatively well. He's been a Champions League manager with a team right at the top, which didn't work out. And now he's in a position with Everton where he's in, let's be honest, they're a bottom half club who just avoided relegation next season. He has got an awful lot to do now over the course of the remainder of time that he will be at Everton to prove that he's got what it takes to be the England manager. So that's how much it's on the line for him.
I spoke to him over the summer about this, and I think he's very much brought into the vision of this being a project, of this being something that he can, a club that he can pick up when it's at a low ebb, and he can help kind of create a structure and build some positive momentum over the course of a couple of years. Because, you know, as you allude to there, I think however good a manager he may turn out to be at the moment, you know, he needs to do well at Everton to get any shot of a. And if he does well at Everton, he may not want to move out elsewhere. It's a massive club, and if he was to lead it to any kind of success, I mean, he probably is already iconic on Merseyside following what happened at the back end of last season. If he was, I mean, he'd be a hero if he was to deliver any kind of success to Everton. Connor, heading into the start of the season, we've got Chelsea tomorrow. We always end these things with predictions. It's going to be a really interesting game, but no doubt it's going to be an entertainment game. It's going to be fantastic being there outside the stadium beforehand when the players are welcomed by the fans. Which will be such incredible scenes again. How confident are you feeling for tomorrow, and can you give us a prediction?
I think I was certainly confident at the start of the week. I felt, you know, the good establishment would come back. I'm not going to lie, the Calvert-Lewin injury news did burst that confidence a little bit, because I thought, well, that's a blow, because obviously I would have liked to have seen, you know, someone like Koulibaly up against Calvert-Lewin to really put him under pressure and give him a test. I don't think that, obviously, you know, the suggestion Dele Alli might play in the false nine. I don't think he'll probably give him the aerial threat, certainly, that Calvert-Lewin would have. But I think, you know, it's an 5:30 kickoff, you know, Goodison Park, first game of the season, the atmosphere will be good. And I have a hunch that I think it'll be 1-0 Everton, Dele Alli.
Absolutely fantastic.
The former Tottenham man, isn't it? You know, the former Tottenham man coming back to, you know, by Chelsea. He's thinking like himself sometimes, don't think in football. So
John, it'll be fantastic to have you at Goodison Park tomorrow as well. I mean, you know, can I trouble you for a prediction?
If Everton get something out of this, I think that's an acceptable start. If they get a point out, I just think with Chelsea, there's a lot of pressure on Chelsea, and there's been clearly a huge amount of change at that club at the top of the club. But they've spent a lot of money. They've now signed Cucurella. I mean, this you know, interesting deal that they've done with Levi Colwill going the other way. But you know, in terms of the transfer fee, that's a bigger transfer fee than they spent on Raheem Sterling, who they've brought in. You know, so I just think the players that they've brought in, very interesting, could potentially be vulnerable because relationships are still being made at the back. So that's something. But whether Everton are able to take advantage of that under the circumstances, we'll see. So I think putting all that together and some of the attacking talent that Chelsea have got, I mean, I was making a note, my notes this morning, you go through and it just goes on and on and on. You know, if only Everton had those sort of resources at their disposal. So I think a point from this for Everton would do them fine.
I think a point would be a very good result as well. I think it's very much a case of it's two sides that are in two clubs really that are in transition at the moment, and both of them have had roller coaster summers. We've had Chelsea with a takeover that has happened, and we've had Everton that have been subjected to takeover rumours that haven't happened, as well as many other things. So I think I'm going to go for 1-1 in my prediction, and I see that very much as a positive result for Everton, hopefully a foundation from which they can build on for the rest of the season. Well, obviously, we will be back on Monday, the Royal Blue podcast, with all the fallout from what happens on Saturday night, and hopefully with some new signings. Thanks ever so much for joining us. We really appreciate it. And wherever you are in the world, we hope you have a lovely day, a lovely evening. Thanks very much for joining us.
You've been listening to the Royal Blue podcast from the Liverpool Echo.